This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
They were like, so where are you from? Like, what's your story? And I was like, I'm just a weird arm slot guy from Maryland. Like, I think I'm good at baseball. Some coaches tell me I'm not. Other coaches say, yeah, but not enough. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to get outs for somebody. And if you want it to be against you or with you, like, just let me know.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. On today's episode, I'm talking to the most interesting man covering college baseball, former UVA right-hander Stephen Schock. You might know Stephen from his viral post-game interview during the 2021 regionals during his time as UVA's closer, or just his general persona covering college baseball. And today we're talking about his career and why he loves the sport of college baseball so much. We dive into a lot. Converting to sidearm in high school, his college career, which spanned two transfers, the difference in transferring the old-fashioned way versus the transfer portal, getting to close for his dream school in UVA during a College World Series run, and also stuff about odd summer jobs, bullpen antics, and why every team needs a weird guy, and what he wants to see in college baseball in the future. Stephen was a fantastic interview. I encourage you, go check out his podcast and just follow the guy on Twitter. Just a general delight, and he's just someone who's incredible for the game of college baseball. Really glad he took the time. Episodes of this podcast drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and go check out past interviews. We are north of 100 episodes now, all evergreen content, so go check those out. And make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news, including college baseball postseason content upcoming, so tune in for that. And with that, let's talk to Stephen Schock. All right, joining in for today's episode of Phenom to the Farm, he's a well-traveled college right-hander, most notably with UVA, a general college baseball enthusiast, and host of the Schock Factor podcast, Stephen Schock. Stephen, thank you so much for joining the show. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. It's been a long time coming, but I'm very excited for it.
I'm super pumped, and I'm going to put you right on the spot. Who's winning the Natty?
Who's winning the Natty? I think the team that has the most fun.
I love that philosophy.
Yeah, because, I mean, one, I can't be wrong. I mean, you aren't going to see people frowning after winning the national championship. So it'll be a fun process, and the fun meter will be off the charts for that team. But also, I'm safe because now I'm not wrong either. So it's a safe pick. I of course, am always polling for any team that one of my former teammates is on. So, you know, you got guys at Alabama, you got guys all over the nation at this point who have entered the portal and gone on their way. Wake Forest is another team. I'm thinking of Tate Ballesteros, great guy there. But of course, you know, there are just so this year in college baseball, especially, there's been more talent, and it's been like more across the board than it ever has been before. And I know, like, with the transfer portal, people were worried, like, oh, there's just going to be, like, one or two really good teams. There's a lot of really good college baseball players, and they're all over the place right now. So this is the most uncertain I have been about, leading up to the postseason in my, you know, short 3 years of paying very close attention to the postseason. but there's just so much to consider. I mean, Texas A&M. They really do have a lot of talent.
Braden Montgomery, objectively good at baseball.
Just a phenomenal baseball player. He has more raw talent in his pinky than I have in my whole entire body. So, you know, those are guys that I obviously am hoping we get to watch play a little bit longer because they're very fun to watch.
100%. It's been an exciting college baseball season already. I'm looking, just couldn't be more pumped for the postseason. And we'll get into talk of the portal. You are on this show 100 plus episodes in, the first person who's ever entered the portal. So I'm looking forward to unpacking the mythical transfer portal, and everything that goes into that. But let's go back to your pre-college days. You ended your college career in the College World Series pitching for a national powerhouse, your dream school. Is that the trajectory you seemed like you were on when you entered high school?
No, entering high school, I was a power hitting first baseman. I was not a pitcher. I was not a weird arm slot guy. Steven Schock didn't even exist yet. freshman year in high school, like I would hit home runs because I was like a foot taller than everybody else, and you know, people didn't know how to spin it yet. People learned how to spin it by high school. The career was not looking great. I did make varsity my freshman year, and so that was like a, oh, maybe I can be decent, because I threw a little bit hard, and I wasn't a weird arm slot guy yet, but I was probably about like three quarters, just because no one ever really kind of taught me how to throw properly, and I just let it eat. And so I was feeling really confident in high school, and I was like, hey, maybe, like, you know, we can be a really good high school player. My only goal freshman year, like baseball wise that I thought of for high school, was to become the strongest person on the team. And then after many years being in the weight room and realizing how overrated that was, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to try to be the best baseball player I can be and see how far it can take me. But, you know, ending up at UVA was not really in the cards. I thought my closest relationship to UVA baseball would be in that freshman year. We were entering the postseason. We had a game against Paul the Sixth, the varsity team, and we were taking batting practice pregame, and a kid named Kevin Doherty hit a line drive right into the sun, and I was not paying attention. Well, I was paying attention, but I did not see this thing off the bat. And we had like football bleachers behind home plate. It was impossible. Hit me square in the nose, broke the thing, just shattered like the whole, whichever eye is lazy, I think it's my right one. That was the orbital that shattered. So that was a very interesting experience. I thought that was only gonna be my only connection to UVA baseball, and I'm just very fortunate it ended up the way it did, because, you know, throughout high school I was not the best. I mean, I will say by my senior year I had kind of figured out how to get outs. I kind of knew what I was doing by then, but even still, like, I wasn't heavily recruited. I had one offer out of high school, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be an App State Mountaineer, and that'll be my career, and we'll make the most of it.
Well, talking on figuring how to get outs, because you, as a high school, like, you are a big guy, and if someone saw you and was like, that guy plays baseball, you'd go, oh, that guy throws 95 or something like that.
I would.
As you developed, and what went into the decision, okay, I am going to be a funky arm slot guy, despite the fact that I am big?
Yeah, so by the summer of my freshman year, I hit 86 miles an hour from my weird slot. And I was like, okay, that's pretty good. In my hometown, there was another kid named Cody Morris, who I kept an eye on baseball-wise. We grew up playing together. I was on the rec team. He was on the travel team. But he played rec too. And that's where we played together. And he always was like, that was the guy. I was like, I want to be as good as that guy. And then in high school, he was like throwing 90 by freshman year. And I was like, okay, that's not, that probably won't happen. But I'm going to be as good as I can be. And so I was going to a pitching coach named Mark Shives, who Kevin Doherty and his family actually set me up with him. So a little full circle moment. It was really cool. And he was like, hey, what you're doing is good, but like, just try bending at the hips. And I was like, okay. I tried one pitch. It sucked. Then the next pitch, he came out, he threw a pitch, because he was a weird arm slot guy in college. I think he went to Florida Internet or one of the Florida schools. I cannot exactly remember which one it was. It might have been UCF. But either way, he threw one, and I was like, okay, I'm a highly visual learner. Like, if someone tells me how to do something, if they don't describe it with like similes, I don't really understand it. But if someone shows me something, like, I know it, like, I know how to replicate it. It's very strange. But I saw him do it. And then he was like, just pretend your front elbow has a like string with a hook on it. And at the bottom of the hook, when you lift your leg up, that hook connects to your knee, and you just go down with it and then throw as hard as you can. And I was like, all right, yeah, we'll see how that goes. And I threw a pitch, and it was 84 miles an hour. And I was like, okay, I'll just do that. And so in talking with him, he was like, look, you don't have to do this. Like, if you want to, you can. But like, the way I see it is every college needs a weird arm slot guy. And he's a bit of a pioneer. Because there weren't
needs one. You need just at least one weird guy. It's like the you have to have one weird guy, and then you also need a weird arm slot guy. Sometimes those guys are the same guy. Sometimes they're a different guy.
Absolutely. And so the way he put it, he was like, look, do you think you're one of the best, 1,000 pitchers who can be a starting pitcher at the college level? Or do you think you can be in the top 300 weird arm slot guys who, you know, if every team needs one? And I was very fortunate, as this was happening, the year was 2012 leading into 2013. And that college season, David Berg for UCLA just went absolutely off. Just the king. King of weird arm slot guys.
He's the guy who, I think we're the same age, actually. And he might be a year younger than me, but he was the guy who, after I was done playing, I was like, I needed to see his YouTube videos when I was playing, because they would have made me better at throwing sidearm because of how well he used his legs and cleared his body.
Oh my goodness. He was just an absolute machine. And like, what I loved about him was like, there was no ego at all. Like, he did not care. He was like, I am going to be the most fearsome closer in college baseball. And I won't break 87, you know, like I refuse to, and I respected him for it. But like, so all this was happening, and then that summer I'm, you know, playing summer ball, trying to get recruited, watching David Berg close down games in the College World Series. I'm like, all right, well, this can be done. I was like, look, obviously I'm not as good as David Berg as a high schooler, but to be a little bit delusional, you have to really believe in yourself. And I was like, look, if he can do it, so can I. And
I read that quote, can you be one of the best 300 sidearmers in college baseball? I read that in an interview when I was doing prep for this, and I was like, man, that's such a good, it's really like the, I don't have to outrun this bear, I just have to outrun you version of getting into college baseball. But it's like, it can apply to so many different things. Like, you don't have to be the best player in your state. Like, can you be one of, you know, can you be one of 900 good defensive catchers to make it into college? Like, things like that. Like, college is all about, unless you are a slam dunk guy, a lot of it is like finding your niche at the right school.
Oh, I always think about it. Like, if I had the exact same talent I have today, like I was the exact same person, one, I would have to throw harder playing college because everybody's throwing a million miles an hour. It's insane. But I would just become the best bunter in the nation. There would not be a single person better than me. And I think that would get me on a team because, I mean, you think about it. Coaches probably get 1,000 emails a day. Like, hey, coach, I'm a really good shortstop. That's cool. How many emails are you going to get? Subject line. Hey, coach, you need a guy who can get one down at any point, like literally ever. Here's a 10-minute tape of me bunting. It's upwards of 4,000 bunts. But you know what? If you need it, I can get it done for you. And I think there would be a school that would take that kid.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause it's, hey, I'll make the grades. You won't have to worry about me. And if I won't take up a scholarship, if you need someone to get a bunt down, I'm there.
And it's like, so, look, you want your weird guy. That guy's going to be obscure.
For sure. For sure. That guy's going to have an interesting dorm room.
Like, that guy will pull out a deck of cards and you will want to run away because he's got some tricks up his sleeve.
A guy my freshman year who started a garden in one of the drawers in his dorm. It's that guy.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I will say that guy, I guess I don't want to dox him, but that guy was much more than a bunter. you need the weird guy. You mentioned you get one offer. What was recruiting like back in the dark ages of 2015?
Oh, it sucked. I remember sophomore summer is when you could start getting calls from coaches. I believe the day was like July 15th or something like that. I got a call from Comcast, almost killed the call representative with words.
Oh, that's frustration. That's brutal.
It was rough. I got one call from a Virginia Tech, believe it or not. And it was Coach Kunigonis, who he had seen me play in Blacksburg a lot. Like, he had expressed that he was interested. Then they found a kid throwing like 94 from a weird arm slot. And they were like, we're going to go with him. And I was like, yeah, good call. Whatever. No, I'm over it. I'm totally over it. No, I'm kidding.
I will say, I almost got on this call with, I grew up rooting for Virginia Tech. I almost got on this call with the 2000 Sugar Bowl shirt I was wearing. And then I was like, out of respect, I'm going to change.
Hey, it's no hate, man. Like, look, the rivalry is what makes it awesome. Like, in my
that's
mind,
what makes college sports awesome.
It really does. And that just means people care. You know, at the end of the day, that's all it is. Like, we chose to go to a school in a great state. That's how I'll always end it when people are like, oh, you went to Virginia, I went to Virginia Tech. It's like, yeah, we both got a banger education. This is awesome. Like, life's pretty
beautiful
good.
Scenery in both yeah. towns.
Yeah.
Both beautiful places to go to
school. Oh man, you had great mountains around you. Oh, you too. Shoot. But so like that was, I remember I got that call and I had toured Virginia Tech and I was like, oh, this is a lot of walking, but nice campus, very nice place. And I had toured a few other schools. I toured William and Mary, VCU, Maryland. And then there were a few other schools that like had just kind of talked to me, but weren't really that interested. But come senior fall, I still had no offers. I went to a camp or a showcase called Battle of the Border held at App State. And when I was there, I was kind of upset because I was throwing the last three innings of an 18 inning game, which, oh. Oof. So I was
it's a long wait. No one wants to be there. That's tough.
I did not know a single person. There were multiple weird guys in the bullpen that I wish I still knew their names. I wish I could have kept up with them because holy cow, holy smokes. You talk about weird people. And I mean that in a great way. Like it was like, I had no idea who these people were and they were having normal conversations cause they all know each other. So I was just an observer and like, they were so friendly and like that part was great, but the whole waiting around, I had warmed up 7 hours ago. So I come into the game and they're like, okay, you get three innings. And I was like, great. Can really showcase what I can do. And so while I was a little pissed off, they let me kind of call my own game and I struck out 8 of the 9 guys I faced. One kid had a little squib base hit and then another kid grounded a ball right back to me. And I remember launching it over to first base relatively hard. But afterwards I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go home. And I got a text from one of the, I believe it was the pitching coach at the time was named Michael Rogers at App State. And he was like, okay, hey, we want to show you around campus. We watched you pitch today. And I believe he was actually on an anniversary dinner with his wife and a graduate assistant, a gentleman by the name of Taylor Sandifer, who works for Marshall now as one of their coaches. He called him and was like, hey, you should come see this kid. And I think I topped at 85 that day. But again, I just threw strikes and they were like, so where are you from? Like, what's your story? And I was like, I'm just a weird arm slot guy from Maryland. Like, I think I'm good at baseball. Some coaches tell me I'm not. Other coaches say, yeah, but not enough. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to get outs for somebody. And if you want it to be against you or with you, like, just let me know. And so I met the head coach, Billy Jones, who was a great guy. Loved Billy Jones. And he was an interesting guy. He was a fierce competitor kind of guy, which I love. And he was like, so we can give you money to come play baseball here. And I was like, yeah, no, I'll do that. And he like made it so clear from the beginning. He was like, now I know you start at your high school, but like here, you're going to be a relief pitcher. Like you aren't going to be a starting pitcher. You aren't going to be a closer, like right off the bat. Like you're just going to go out there and you're going to be a bridge guy. And like, let me just be clear with you. It's not sexy. No one cares. No girls come to the game and are like, hey, who got the hold today? No reporters are going to be like, hey, that was a sick hold you got there. What was it like? And I was like, yeah, that's totally fine. Like, I don't care about that. Like, I just want to get outs and get free gloves. Like at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, the best deal.
Oh, 100%. Like that's the free stuff. Like before NIL, like one, it would be super cool to have made money. But all the free stuff and like trading gear with your friends over the summer, like I
that summer ball is the summer ball's the best thing. So at my school, being a very underfunded D2 program, we didn't get a lot, but what we did have was a hat with an actual logo on it, like an actual caricature. Like we had a falcon that looked like a pigeon, and that was hot commodity because most everyone just has letters. So you come home with some good stuff.
Summer ball after UMBC won that basketball game.
Oh,
that gear skyrocketed. I was getting
that's hot. That's
I was getting like vented Nike Alabama shirts. Like you're kidding me.
That's the dream right there. You get down to Boone for freshman year, and like Billy Jones told you, you're the bridge guy. You're getting innings. Were you the only weird arm slot guy on the team?
No. So we had a JUCO transfer named Matt Schaefer, and essentially, I don't know if they did stuff like this on purpose, but like we would have bullpens and they'd be like, okay, Schaefer and Shock, like you're throwing together. And like, we would both be on the radar gun and they would be yelling out our velos and like, they would be like, oh, it's not about who's throwing harder, it's about who's throwing more strikes. And then you're sitting there like wondering, do they mean that? Like what is this trap? Because it feels like a trap. But it was really fun because it was like, look, we're gonna learn from each other, but we're also gonna compete with each other a bunch. And honestly, I think that's like one of the best ways for teams to get better is like when you're competing against someone who has a lot of talent for that spot, then you're gonna compete a little bit harder. So I'd never encountered another weird arm slot guy. And don't get me wrong, Schaefer was weird, and he's a great dude. Love Schaefer. He coaches down in Florida now, I think at the collegiate level. He was at Florida A&M for a little bit, I believe. Don't quote me on anyone else's trajectory because I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's where they went. But either way, it was really fun, like just getting to campus, and I didn't expect there to be two because, again, my whole belief was, hey, look, everybody needs one. And so I saw two. I was like, okay, well, now we're going to have to get a little bit funkier, a little bit of competition. And it was just a matter of throw strikes. And once you get that competitiveness out and like you find a way to effectively use it, that's when like baseball becomes not easy, but it becomes simple. It's just like, oh, I just got to outcompete today.
When you got to that level, because you had pretty deep, you got a lot of innings, you had pretty decent success at your 1 year at App State. It didn't kind of reflect the rest of your career, but it was a solid season, especially for a freshman. That's kind of like any freshman season that doesn't like have a story about you like giving up 10 runs in a single inning, I think is like a solid freshman season. But it's an adjustment from high school where we kind of glossed over your senior year. You gave up all of 0 runs, which is decent year. So as you transition into the collegiate level, what about your game? What became your game? You mentioned like throwing strikes, but from down, you know, from throwing from that funky angle, you get the benefit of everything's going to run out arm slide. You get that sinker. You kind of know the game there. Were you able to complement that with a breaking ball? Cause that's always kind of the tough part from down there. Or were you like, I'm pounding righties in and I'm making lefties beat it into the ground away?
Yeah. So for me, all of my focus was just being able to throw two different pitches for strikes in any counts, regardless of what's going on. And that all started really early for me. Like my pitching coach, Mark Shives in high school, was like, look, if you can locate a slider at any point during any game, and a college coach sees that, like they will recruit you based on that alone. Like, because high school kids don't typically have the gumption or the confidence. For me, I just saw, okay, my slider is the same thing as my fastball. I think what helped me was I understood a lot about like how my hand was moving and how like different hand positions helped out, but also on sliders, especially for submariners, what they don't realize, and a lot of pitchers, they don't realize that you're still supinating your hand or pronating. Yeah, pronating. That's pronating. So it's not an actual like flick of the wrist like this, but it's that motion of just taking your hand to full extension and getting it out in front. And I think that's what really helped me, was having these mental cues with my slider. So my cue was throw it in front of your ear. And I wanted to feel the side of my foot drag. And when I did that, it would just be a strike. And so for me, it was a lot of learning that if your process is good, then you're typically going to get the results, but also just not caring about the results. Because if you cared about them, like, you'll go crazy. So I remember the one outing my freshman year that I wish I could take the ball back on was against Longwood. It was the final outing of the season. I think I gave up 2 runs. Just it shot me up from like a 3 ERA to I think like a 4.3. Just a killer outing to end the season. And it was a bummer game. It was the last pitch thrown of the season. And man, that one haunts me to this day. People think
there's
that
always,
other
there's
outings,
always those.
It's that one.
You don't enter the portal. You enter what used to be the transfer market, which is, hey, I'm leaving. I need to find somewhere to go not play baseball for a year. What were the archaic pre-portal days like as you left App State?
Talk about a heinous process. That was terrible. I remember, so I had no idea how to transfer. I called our athletic director and I was like, hey, how do I transfer? And they sent me like a long list of things I needed to do.
Because for context, the staff had been relieved of their duties, correct?
Yeah, they got aside from our pitching coach who stayed, and I did like our pitching coach, Justin Asperger, and he's at Rice now. I do know that. He's a good dude. I like him. But they all left, and I was like, okay, well, I would rather go somewhere where like the coaches have seen me and like they aren't just like, hey, look, this is a hand-me-down. Like, if you bought a house and the couch is still in it from the previous owner, are you going to be like, wow, I'm fired up about this couch? Or are you going to be like, there's that used couch? We don't know. But if I am the hand-picked, hand-furnished player, if I'm the sectional that Liam Bowen and Bob Muma at UMBC want, then I'm going to go there. And so it was so strange just because I called the AD, he gave me the list of things I had to do. I essentially just got my transcripts and de-enrolled or left the school essentially. And I don't know if that was the right way to do that. I don't know if that's how I was supposed to do that. I remember that the registrar had sent emails about not sending me my transcripts after, and I was like, I already have them. So we're good. and our academic advisor lady was also, she retired that year. And I was like, look, I'm not going to bug Miss Jean. Like, she just pulled me through my first year of school and she's retiring. Let her enjoy that. So I get the paperwork and I'm like, okay, I can start texting coaches that I'm back. I'm back, baby. You know, hey, you know what you missed out on? That 4.3 ERA in the Sun Belt. You want that? But I was fortunate that there are some coaches who had seen me in high school who I had given them a resume that they were interested in. I remember Longwood was actually one of the schools that offered me as I transferred. And I was like,
we messed up your ERA. Come let us fix it.
I joked. I was like, do you just want me to throw BP to your guys? Like, because I was like, I pitched so bad against them. I remember they left the scouting report up and it was like plus fastball minus slider. I was like, all right, I think it's a little bit better than a minus, but all right.
Going understood. From Boone to Farmville would just be like the Boonies Olympics. Just pitching out in the middle of nowhere for 4 years.
I would have cabin fever. You know, that's the way I got like my freshman year. I was like, I'm used to being between two of the biggest cities in America. Now I am 8 hours away from that. I am like 3 hours away from the closest big city and I know no one there. So
no disrespect to Boone, which has one of the most beautiful setting, beautiful, and no disrespect to Farmville, which is a city where people live.
No, not at all. I just, you know, for me, it's not my cup of tea. Like that, and that's fine. You know, some people probably won't want to live where I live. And that's totally fine. That's life. That's the great thing about it, because then it makes it easier for me to live here. It makes it easier for them to live there. I'm just helping out, really. And, you know, since I had this thought about the Boone housing market and I was like, how can I help it out? I was like, okay, we'll hit that portal. And I had a few coaches. There were a few coaches who told me no in high school who I had fun telling no now. I will admit I was petty and I don't regret it because I was very confident in myself in high school, and they told me that I wasn't good. And I was like, you know what? I actually am. And look at you now. But one of the people who was always nice, always believed in me, Bob Mumma and Liam Bowen, they were like, hey, come see our school. I went. And when I went on my official visit or whatever it was, when I showed up to campus over summer before my summer ball game against the Baltimore Redbirds, I went by the field and Coach Mumma was there with like, I don't remember who was there with him, but he was hitting catchers pop-ups to them. And I was like, oh, these must be some of the catchers. And he was like, no, nah, it's just two of the pitchers. Like, hey, nice to meet you. Like, what are we doing here? And he was like, we just like to have fun from time to time, like mess around. He was like, they bet me that I couldn't hit one and get it to land on the plate, and I bet them they couldn't catch catcher's pop-ups, so here we are. And I was like, this place seems like a blast. Like, yeah, that'll work. And I also,
the vibes are good.
Oh yeah, for me, I was at a point where I was like, look, I want to love baseball, like I want to have fun doing it, because at App State, you know, we didn't win that much. And for me, that wasn't that fun. So I was like, I want to come back and I want to win and I want to have a lot of fun.
That, I mean, it seems like it worked, because you sit out for a year, which probably wasn't the most fun, but
baseball-wise.
Listen, I redshirted. I know how that year goes. Yeah, it's a lot of fun in other ways.
I know a lot of people look at the redshirt year and they're like, oh, that sucks. It's like, it's not the worst thing ever. Plus, it gave me a lot of time. Like, I joke that it's not that fun, or it was fun, but also it gave me a lot of opportunity to get my footing in terms of like classes and catching up on coursework too. Believe it or not, I actually did do school pretty seriously. I don't use it that much, but I did it.
I mean, you did have to graduate from UVA, so that, I mean, that's not like the easiest school.
No, it was not on the radar, for sure.
You sit out, you do that transfer year, and then a year removed from a freshman year where you were good, not great, you become elite. Like you have in a much like Maryland legend Joe Flacco, you become an elite player, and it's something you sustain. You sustained a certain level of success for the rest of your career. What was the difference between freshman year you and redshirt sophomore year you?
I was just so grateful to be playing baseball. Like, it was so much fun. It sucked redshirting and sitting out and not getting to play. Like, there's nothing worse than being on a team or being a part of a team and sitting there not being able to contribute to the team's success. And they won the conference championship that year. That was really cool. But it was like, dang, I didn't do anything for that. Like, I remember they gave us a ring the next year, and I was like, I felt like in semi-pro when Monix is on the bus and they're like, you didn't do anything to get that. It's like, yeah, no, I know. Like, I would have gladly helped. And I think I could have helped. But at the same time, the NCAA didn't let me. But I think just having that gratitude of getting back out there. I mean, my first time getting back onto the field was with the Bethesda Big Train, which, phenomenal place to be on the field. I love that place. It was so much fun. And I was just around a group of guys that I really enjoyed being around. And like, the thing about playing for the Big Train that I learned was like, we did not as players focus that much. We weren't really locked in. In the bullpen, we were ordering Uber Eats, having a good time playing games like Password, Black Magic, just messing with each other, having a great time. And at the end of the season, they'd always hand us the championship trophy, and we were like, oh, we won that. That's sick. But that was the thing about playing for them, was like, if you can play loose, like, you can play when the time gets tough too. Like, when you need to focus, you can really lock in. And I think like playing for the Big Train, it was an extreme sense of like that separation of in the bullpen. Like, Sal Colangelo, I love that dude with all my heart. One of the best dudes in the world. Virginia Tech Hokie. Like, he did such a good job of letting us be ourselves. Like, I remember there was one game. I came in, and it was the final game, and I hadn't walked a guy all season. And that was my one goal, was to not walk a single person. It's the second to last inning of the season, and Jack Cunningham, who played at Boston College, he played at PVI. We had played against each other a ton. I end up walking him, but I end up walking him on a 3-2 slider right down the middle that the umpire at home plate punches on. But I got called for a quick pitch, which they said was a balk, and that's an automatic ball. When I tell you, I have never been more angry about something in my entire life. Jack Cunningham has hit so many doubles off the wall off me throughout my life. This is the one at-bat that keeps me up at night. And I remember turning to the umpire, and he goes, well, you can't deceive the base runner. I said, no one's on, doofus, look around. Read a book. I said a lot of things. I don't know how I stayed in the game, but I did. And I remember I came to the dugout, and I'm like, I was in a different world. Like, I remember I was like holding my neck, like really upset with myself. And Sal just came over and he goes, Steve, you good? And I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. What's up? And like, he was like, all right, just checking. And like, that was it. Like, that was how Sal was with us. And it was just such a good time. But having that appreciation and that fun for it to answer the question.
I mean, that's what I always loved about summer ball, because the college season, no matter if you are the most fun-loving guy ever, there's a certain level of high stress, high focus to those games, because every weekend really matters. A loss, especially in Division I, where you're playing for like your RPI or whatever, you're trying to get into the dance at the end, like every game, every series has a certain level of weight on it. Summer ball is really the way to get back to like high school travel ball days, where it's just like, man, this is fun. Like, the sport is fun. You're hanging out with guys. You're hanging out with guys from different schools. You're picking up some stuff, which is one of the good things about summer ball, is like you meet guys from different, like, so I think the famous thing of like Brandon Finnegan learned his breaking ball from Carlos Rodon and things like that. Like, things like that just come around in summer ball. With all that being said, though, I did not play in the Cape. You ended up playing in the Cape. We haven't had a Cape guy in a while. Is the vibe in the Cape different? And especially, like, you are a college baseball fan and we're a college baseball fan. We talked about the movie Summer Catch before we started recording. Obviously, the Cape has a certain level of precedence. But what is the vibes? What are the vibes like in the Cape, when the Cape is kind of also, for a lot of guys, like, this is a tryout. This is, you know, scouts are here.
It is so much fun. Like, it was the second most... If I didn't have such a blast playing for the Big Train, it would have been the most fun experience. Like, I have no doubt in my mind, if someone does not play for the Big Train and plays in the Cape, that's the best experience they'll have, because it is just, it's a whole nother universe. Like, it really is. Like, I described it to my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time when I was talking to her about it. She was like, what's it like up there? I was like, you know, in Gilmore Girls, that town. It's like that, but everybody likes baseball. So, like, the SEC meets Gilmore Girls meets, like, just the best place in the world. And it was so much fun up there, because, you know, every once in a while you are talking to scouts and they're, like, doing all these serious interviews with you. And, like, it would be hilarious. Like, I remember watching, like, Bryce Jarvis. He would have scouts all the time, like, talking to him and interviewing him, because, you know, very talented guy. It makes sense. And like, the dude just wanted to play hacky sack. Like, he would just want to be over with us kicking the sack. And that's what was so much fun about it, is like how serious it is. Like, guys would be getting calls and being offered like hundreds of thousands of dollars to go play professional baseball. Like, their dreams are coming true, while we're just like hammering BLTs and clam chowder from the Coop, which was the place right across the street from us. It was like a little quick marketplace. But like, it was just awesome, because it's like, where else can you get this? But when it comes to playing up there, there is the seriousness of like game time. Like, it's pretty tight. Like, it's not like a super loose environment, unless you're at the bullpen. The bullpens across any summer ball, that's where you're going to find the animals. That's where you're going to find the good times of just guys who, you know, they have the full blown laid back, because that's the joy of being a bullpen pitcher. And it's one of the separators, is
if you ever walk into a bullpen and it's serious, like, someone's an undercover cop, like, something wrong, yeah, something bad has happened.
It's like, there's a someone took too much pre-workout, someone's dying. But even then, if that's the case, you got five other guys on pre-workout carrying that dude to the hospital. But I think the bullpens, you'll always be weird, because to be a relief pitcher, you got to be insane, but also you got to be able to flick the switch with like, okay, I'm in the zone right now, or I'm messing around. Like, for me, it was always when I started throwing my warmups. That was when it was like, all right, I'm going to shut up. I'm no longer doofus Steve. I'm pitcher Steve. But in the Cape, it was just like, we're going to play the best players we've ever played against on these high school fields in front of like 4,000 people who they won't be there for BP, but as soon as the first pitch is thrown, they just come through the woods. Like it was, I need to get a video of it happening, like a time lapse this summer in Kituat. Like people literally, because they're beyond the first baseline, there's about 30, I don't know how thick of a woods it is, but like it's walkable. And on the other side's a beach. So like people just like walk right from the beach to the ball field and like have a great time. Everybody loves the players. You get treated really well, which is cool. I'm no longer in the NCAA and I didn't win a Heisman for them to take away from me. So I'll admit it. There's this one dude at a pizza place who would give me $100 every time I saw him. I would make an effort to find him from time to time. But
they would have absolutely taken away your Heisman from that too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we got to keep what we can get. I got my participation trophy from the College World Series boarded up. So come and try to take that one.
But, come and take it.
But it was just so much fun. And like, it's so cool up there. Like if you play in the Cape and you come back to school ever and you wear any piece of memorabilia, people will give you crap. Like your teammates will be like, "Oh, Cape guy." It's textbook good shaming. It's a thing that happens, but like there's so much pride in playing up there. It's like, for me, I got up there and I had a decent amount of success. And I was like, look, if I can get outs here, I can get outs against literally anyone in the nation. And it was such a confidence boost.
The D2 version of that is guys who play in the Northwoods. It's like, oh, we get it. You played the Northwoods this year.
Yeah, it's like, congrats on surviving, because that is a grind.
Oh, like, that's minor league baseball.
It's impressive.
With that, you know, not to besmirch App or UMBC, but you go to the Cape and you pitch well, and you mentioned like Bryce Jarvis, who's at Duke. And you're kind of seeing all these guys who are in the ACC and the SEC, whatever. When did you start getting aspirations of, you know, maybe like I can pitch at that level too? And now there's this mythical new portal that I can just swim through.
So when in my redshirt year, actually, this might sound bad, but I always thought of it as like, okay, my punishment is sitting out a year, but the payback, the investment is in 4 years, I get to essentially try to get a master's degree from a really good school and play baseball there. So like, you know, that's kind of my destiny. Like I could do it at UMBC, but you know, I like changes of scenery. I want to see the world. I want to see different places. So I won, of course, UVA was my dream school growing up. So, and Kevin Doherty had broken my face and I was like, that was the best baseball player I knew. I'd like to follow in his footsteps. And so I want to say after my summer in the Cape was when I talked to Coach Bowen at UMBC. I was like, hey coach, like, just so you know, just so it's on your radar, like I'm going to put my name in this portal. Like, if it's okay with you, because like you have to ask. The way the portal worked, it was brand spanking new. Like I think it came out in October. I was in it like October 10th and out of it October 15th, I want to say. But either way, I was like, look Coach Bowen, like I don't want to be disrespectful, but I was looking at it and I know like you can take my scholarship away if I put my name in the portal, but you can't kick me off the team. That's one of the rules, I believe. And I was like, but I would really appreciate it if you guys don't do that. And if you guys are okay with it, like me going into the portal, like I don't want to spend all season long thinking like, oh, I got to impress this team and like take things as a tryout. Like I essentially want to go into the portal, find a school, commit to it and wash my hands within the week.
And you were like, going to graduate that spring, right? Like you were going to be done.
Yeah, and this was early in the fall before I had gone ineligible in late November. So we were all good. We were cream. Things were falling into place. I didn't really go ineligible. I just dropped one class that it didn't make sense to take because it wasn't in my major anymore. And they were like, you dropped it past the deadline. I was like, I don't really care. Like, I'm not going to take it. And there was a week left of the semester. So it was like, okay, I couldn't practice with the team for 1 week. But either way, I talked to Coach Bowen and I was like, And he was like, yeah, no, like we figured this was coming. Our one rule is like, please, we don't want you transferring anywhere in conference, but we also want you transferring to a Power Five school. Like, we feel like that's where you belong, and we want to see you at that level. And I was like, that's wow, that's really awesome. That like that's so cool, honestly. And so in the portal, you could put your name in, and you had to send in a written request. So I literally, I just took the closest piece of paper. I think it might have been like a little envelope, and I just wrote like, "Hey," to whoever it was in the athletic department. They just need it. Like, they literally were like, "It can be anything. Just write it on a piece of paper." I had joked with the person I had to turn it into, and they're like, "Okay, yeah, that's fine." And so I gave them that. I was like, "My name's Steve. I want to be in the portal. Coach said it's okay. Sign Steve." Sign Steven Shock. Because legally. And anyway, so I did that at noon after a 10:30 lift, and by noon 30, I had gotten a call from Missouri and North Carolina and UVA. And the Missouri coach, we had played against Missouri the year before, and he was like, "Well, we think you're good." UNC, I don't recall where they had seen me, but I think they had seen me just throughout high school and had heard that I had gotten a little bit better. And then UVA was Michael Garza was the video operations guy at UVA. I don't really know exactly what the title was. He's at Rutgers now. I know that one for a fact, but he was coaching with the Harwich Mariners, and he had seen me over the summer. And when I pitched against the Harwich Mariners, I had a situation where I didn't pitch phenomenal, but Michael Toglia completely bailed me out with like an inhumane double play, which resulted in I don't know where I was or what happened, but there was a trash can in between me and the dugout, or in the dugout, that I had a bit of a tussle with. And I think he saw that. He might have seen that and seen the fire, but I think he might have seen that I threw a lot of strikes out there too. And he was like, "Okay, yeah, no, this kid can play." I had played in the All-Star game, which was at Harwich, so he'd seen me there too. And you know, that's a if you're trying to get recruited, that worked out pretty well for me. I will say I was very fortunate to be considered for that game. I still don't know how I got picked for it, but I look back on it every day and know that like I in the game I pitched to two batters. One was JJ Bleday and the other was Spencer Torkelson, two of the furthest flyouts I've ever seen physically done. I don't think I threw above 83. And I only threw fastballs that game. So that was fun. But either way, that's kind of how they saw me and how I ended up with them.
I have to ask, obviously you mentioned that the basketball game. One, what was that like just on campus? Like, what was that like when that happened? And then you transferred to UVA.
Yeah, so I UMBC is a commuter school, which you know, on campus, it's like the campus is a circle. Like, it's a big circle, and there's one way in, one way out. Whoa, how did
That was
that was okay. All right, all right. Hello, technology. And you're watching Disney Channel. But either way, that was awesome. But the campus is a circle, one way in, one way out. It was designed that way because it was built in like the 1960s, and they were worried like, oh, if another army comes in here and attacks, there's only one way in, one way out. I don't know what secrets they're keeping at UMBC that they're worried about this, but either way, I remember there was one car full of a frat. I want to say a frat. I think we had frats, and they were driving around campus, and that was like it. I was at Buffalo Wild Wings, enjoying some of the coldest beverages a man can enjoy, because the beer's always cold at Buffalo Wild Wings. So
Always cold. Oh,
yeah,
I mean, the
not an
spot.
ad, just it's always right there, you know.
Buffalo
I'm
Wild
sorry.
Wings, you're welcome to sponsor this for free. You don't have to pay.
Yeah,
I just love you.
just keep doing Wing Wednesdays and keep being you.
Yeah, that's the thing. Be yourself,
But
Buffalo Wild Wings. Don't have to be anyone else, just be yourself.
yeah, and so like I remember watching it and I was like, oh my God. And I was there with my wife and we were having a nice meal, and well, girlfriend at the time. Now we are grown-ups and she's my wife. But either way, when I transferred, because that was the year like it happened. And in a graduate program or a master's program, obviously you gotta do icebreakers, because what else would you do? Obviously, first icebreaker, where'd you go to undergrad? I went to UMBC, and it's like what's a fun fact about you, and where'd you go to undergrad? And it's like, hey, Steve, what say you like crocodiles and get booed, essentially. And every time by the end of it, I was like, look, guys, we all are in the same class. This is just a different teacher. You guys already know. You already know. Teach, if you're that concerned, I'll write it down for you. Like, let's just skip the icebreakers. I've been with these people for 4 hours today.
You're kind of good luck, though, because back-to-back years, you've been at a university where they had their basketball high point as a program.
Yeah, I mean, people are overlooking the fact that the intangibles on the hardwood for me are there. I went to a couple of basketball games. I did a t-shirt toss that national championship year, I believe. Essentially, all that. No, it wasn't national championship year. I don't remember when that was, but you just throw your arm out for those. That's the only experience I had on the hardwood at UVA.
If you've heard us talk about HelloFresh before, I wouldn't be surprised if you wonder, okay, is this really as good as they make it sound? And I tell you, listener, it is. And I say that because I am a HelloFresh success story. I say that because I'm not the chef. I'm not the cook in our house. But with HelloFresh, I've become one who can actually be part of the food prep, cooking dinner rotation. Generally, it's breakfast for dinner or something on the grill if dad's expected to cook. Because that's just not who. I don't have those skills. HelloFresh gave me those skills. Why? Because they're quick and easy meals with the instructions that both have written and pictures have allowed me to take the ingredients, do exactly what they tell me to do, and at the end of the day, produce a meal that my family said, wow, that's pretty good. And for them to say that's pretty good when I'm making dinner, that is a miracle. HelloFresh does that for you. It does it for me. And it also gives you the flexibility. You can pick out on their app what food you want to eat. It takes a couple of minutes. They'll deliver it to you. And not only that, but they'll do it in portions that also help me because I have a tendency to eat as much as on my plate. They give you just the right amount of food, whether it's for two, whether it's for four, they proportion it out for you. So if you want to check out HelloFresh like I have, go to HelloFresh.com/BaseballAmerica14. That's Baseball America with the numbers 1-4. Use that code for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/BaseballAmerica14. You can get America's number one meal kit with HelloFresh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it, you know, again, the X factor was there for you in terms of being a hardwood legend, but you get to fall ball that first fall at UVA. It's not like, I would imagine that your eyes weren't wide with, oh, you know, big school, big conference. You had just played in the Cape. Did you know you were kind of destined for the closing job, or how did that come to fruition?
Oh, I just kind of mentally had in my mind, I was like, okay, look, you're a closing pitcher at your previous school. You got a lot of saves and you know how to do that. And that's what you like doing. Like, look, you were the hold guy early in your career. And that wasn't sexy. It's time to be chunky and funky and sexy at the end of games. And I knew Andrew Abbott was there, but I also knew, like, hey, I was like, look, that kid's on the Reds right now. Obviously, I was not going to take his spot, but they were like, we want him to start games and he wants to start games. I was like, okay, yeah, he can definitely, like, he can go way longer than me. Like, just use us whenever you want. And like towards the start of 2020, that's kind of how it went. But in the fall, it was my first outing was really bad. I pitched like garbage and I waited around and I went to coach's office afterwards and I was like, coach, I don't want to like be a prima donna or anything like that, but I just want to say, like, I'm not actually that bad at baseball. Like, I know I came here over summer and I've been conditioning and I've lost some weight because I came in, I was 280 pounds that summer. By the start of the fall, I was 230. So I was a little different. It was, yeah, the weight fluctuates around a lot. I think by the time the season started, I was back to like 240, 245 ish. That's where I typically like to float. But I was like, I know I'm not good at conditioning. And like, I know every time after conditioning, I'm like, I know I'm not good at that, but the baseball stuff, I got you. And I did not have you, in fact, today. And he was like, yeah, do you want to call the pitches yourself? And I was like, yeah, let's try that. That'll be different. And we did that. And he was like, okay, you know what you're doing. You're 23. You should by now. And so he just trusted me a lot. And in doing that, I was like, okay, if he's going to trust me like that, if I can prove like, hey, you know, you don't have to go out and waste a mound visit on this guy and waste everybody's time. Like, he can figure it out himself. You can just yell a mental cue from the dugout. Like, my goal is to be as simple and as uncomplicated as possible. Granted, in the classroom and just in my day-to-day life, I probably made our baseball ops guy's life way harder, but that's kind of on him for having to keep track of us so much. But Justin Armstead, I love you very much. But the whole adjustment was just, it was just different. And I was like, okay, well, this is what it takes to be good, you know? And they made it very clear, like, the sacrifices you have to make for this team to succeed.
The pitch calling thing is a segue to something I wanted to bring up that I think is one of, I think college baseball is in one of the best places it's ever been. I think all the sport, just so much momentum. I think something that is plaguing it is the big, thick pitcher armband. I think aesthetically, it looks terrible. We need congressional hearings. We need to do something about it because it's bad. You did it about as best as you could. The best way to do it, if your team is going to have the thick, I'm an infielder armband, is to do the three quarters and have it just be an extension of the three quarters. Mm-hmm. But like we've got to stop. I watch a lot of TCU. They have a very thin one that's doable. Mm-hmm. But I mean, listen, you either got to shell out for PitchCom, or we got to figure, we cannot have pitchers looking like infielders anymore. We just can't do it.
Yeah, no, it's like, I don't get me wrong, I love the swag. Like, if I could have a leg guard out there while I was pitching, yeah, sign me up. I'd look dope. But either way, like the pitch calling system, I never really understood it, and I was dyslexic. So, super dyslexic, but like the numbers looked
dyslexic
very
enough
similar. When you're full of pre-workout, it comes out more so than normal. And so, like, I was fortunate where Coach Drew Dickinson, like, they just trusted me to call my own games with our catcher, Logan Michaels. And we didn't use it that often. But every now and again, he'd be like, hey, we need to throw this pitch here. So, 1-5-1. And I would look at it and just be like, well, I hope Logan knows what the hell is coming, because I think this is a slider, but you know, he's an athlete back there. And I can't tell you how many times that guy probably bailed me out from getting it wrong. And like, you know, it just kind of still working out and getting lucky. But I think the big solution is like getting the little digital screen that just says like slider, fastball, whatever, and cutting out, like, you know, sponsors will have to sacrifice a little bit, but just having like it installed on the glove right here. Like, we're in a place in technology where, like, I think it's possible, like, just a little Velcro patch even.
Like, yeah. I think at least for Power Five schools that can absolutely afford that, like, we got to do something. The look is just not it. We got to figure out something.
I'm with you. Like, look good, feel good, play good. And like, for me, it was bulky too. Like, it was bulky. I think
I would have had a mental block, and like, I didn't have enough talent. Like, I couldn't get away with not feeling good. If I wasn't feeling, we're screwed. There's not enough juice in the arm to get through even having any single impingement there.
And like, look, I watched Mythbusters growing up. I know what happens when you put a postage stamp on a helicopter blade. Like, you're throwing me completely off kilter.
Exactly.
Nothing actually happened. They busted that myth. Spoilers, I know, but
it's the thought behind it. And
yeah,
I get where you're coming from, but yeah, we need to fix things. So you get the UVA closing job. You're rolling. You've made it to your dream school. You're rolling. COVID hits. No one's rolling anymore. We're all stopped. But you get a bonus year. You get that extra year of school. You do, man. I have to ask you about the summer job history during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
Insurance call center. So when I got out of college, I worked in insurance for a few years. So I'm familiar with this world. But mm-hmm. oh. what would I just that period, because it was like you're also in a very weird area where you're like, you're still in school. You're not having to go to the real world yet. We also don't know if school's coming back or if baseball's coming back or anything like that. Like, what was the mentality during the COVID summer? It's like, I think I'm going to get to play again.
Yeah, it was weird. So I started off landscaping because I was like, look, all the gyms are closed, but if I'm installing patios and throwing mulch around, I'm probably going to get pretty jacked. So I did that for a lot of the summer, and then I ultimately got fired because I didn't show up one day. But I texted that I wasn't going to show up because I threw out my back. And I was like, look, I'm not losing my baseball career this final potential year over some mulch. And I was like, all right, whatever. That's how I got involved in insurance. And I was like, my back will not hurt at insurance. So there it was, Wyatt Insurance. And I was just pounding the phones. Like, if you're from Charlottesville, you've probably talked to me or had a voicemail from me and don't even realize it. Cause I, again, at the time I was just Steve from State Farm. But it was a very interesting dynamic because it made me, like, I'll still text Coach Oak to this day. Like, you know, that was the most important part of my life in terms of baseball, because it made me realize how much it stunk not playing baseball, being in the real world. I was like, if this is what the real world's like, crap, man, like we're in for a long haul. We're going to have to find ways to have fun because it wasn't for me. You know, there was one window in our office and we were below a Staples or an Office Depot, I can't remember which, and we shared walls with a Subway and a Hispanic food store. So like, I was just hungry the whole time because you walk in the morning, the fresh bread.
Mm-hmm.
And then lunch, it's like empanadas and it smells phenomenal. And like, that's all I can think about. And then I'm trying to sell someone a personal articles policy on their laptop. Like, come on now. But it was fun. Like, I love the marketing part of it, like going out in the community and talking to people. My boss always thought I wasn't doing it because no one would call in, but it was typically because I would go out and I would talk to like one person for a really long time. And then they'd be like, no, thanks. I'd be like, all right, that's cool. Like, no problem. No skin off my back. I wasn't very pushy. I was very laid back as a salesperson.
It was also a weird time to just talk to people out in public in general.
Yep. Yeah, it was like, hey, can I walk in or are you going to hate me for existing? That one? Okay.
Yeah. But man, weird times.
It really was. But
weird
time. I will
can't
say,
be said enough how weird 2020 was.
I will say it was phenomenal for Instacart. That was a good time.
I'm sure
being
you
were, an Instacart driver.
I have switched during that time. I switched to grocery pickup at my local HEB. No store does more. Shout out HEB. And I used to love going to the grocery store. I've never gone back. I have a pickup order for today at 4. I can't wait to go get it.
That's
it's
beautiful.
Just the most convenient thing ever.
I wander. I'm a putzer. I like to putz around. I say it all the time.
It saves me money not going in.
I can imagine. I need to do something like that. That's way more responsible.
It saves you money and calories. HEB has a wonderful app. Again, no store does more. We're throwing out the brands today.
Yeah,
the brands that don't
sponsor
the show, we're throwing it out. But
I know I said no free ads, but I do a lot of free ads by accident.
HEB does enough for me that I feel okay shouting them out. But baseball does come back in 2021. And I ask the same question a lot with guys who have gone to Omaha, but did this feel like an Omaha team? Did you feel, you know, from the get-go, hey, we're, you know, we've got the juice. Like, we can make it, because you go into regionals as a 3 seed.
Yeah, so in April, I put in my 60-day notice with my lease because we were 4-12, I believe. So we did not feel like an Omaha team at that point, at least. Like, going into the season, we were like, oh, we have a ton of talent. Like, we were rolling last year. And then we just got off to a super slow start, you know, like it was hard for guys to go a year off from hitting baseballs and start hitting again. Like, our pitching was great. And like that was always something we knew. Like, we had Andrew Abbott. Like, of course, pitching is going to be a good thing. But I think what got overlooked a lot was like the fact that our bats were not like that far behind everyone else's. It was just a matter of they hadn't seen live pitching like this in a long time. And, you know, making that adjustment's hard. Like, for pitchers, the plate didn't move. We didn't shift that. Like, it's all the exact same. So like, I had our portable mound in my front yard of where I was living, and I would throw bullpens into a net. Like it was easy. It's easy to get it done when you're a pitcher. Like it's very controllable. But as a team, like we really had to figure out how good we wanted to be. Cause like we knew the talent was there. It was just a matter of coming together and that talent playing together. Like, I remember at the start of the season, the first couple of weekends, like Abbott would go six innings and lose after giving up like two runs. And it's like, that's just the way baseball goes. And it stinks sometimes. But like, I remember every weekend, me and Mike Vassell on Sundays, like we'd be like, okay, well, you're starting today. I haven't been used. It's like, look, just get a couple of innings. We'll find a way. We're going to win today. And like, that was our mindset of just like, hey, win at least one. Like, don't get swept, survive. And while we figure it out, then we can start like piling it on. And I remember at Georgia Tech, Coach Oak he sat us all down and he was like, look, guys, the season's going to be over after this weekend if we suck this weekend. Like, it plain and simple, like the only way we can still like survive is to win two out of three this weekend, two out of three that weekend, maybe sweep this weekend, mix in a sweep here. And then do well in the conference tournament, and then we might get a bit. And, you know, so from that point on, we were just like, okay, what's it going to take? Like, what are we going to have to do to make this happen? Because Coach Oak says it's going to be cool out there, and it seems really cool, and we really want to do it. And, like, he made it so clear that, like, it's right there for the taking. We're just being stupid, and we weren't playing like ourselves.
Were there nerves on Selection Sunday, or did you know you guys were in?
For me, there were a lot of nerves. I think everybody kind of knew we were in. For me, the nerves were coming from the fact that I had a U-Haul packed up, getting ready to move. Because again, I put in that 60-day notice when we were 4-12, and I was like, "Look, I'm paying my own bills. Rent is expensive. I'm not getting double booked." And so I was like, "Hopefully, it's not too far, so like I can drop that off at some point in Wilmington, North Carolina." We had seen ourselves as a team, like once you get to a certain number of wins, I think it was 35 in the ACC and like out of conference. Coach Oak was like, this is our magic number. Like, this is what we're going for. And I think we had gotten like two or three more than that. And we were like, all right, well, we'll be there. We got our foot in the door. Now it's just a matter of making it happen.
And the regional you go to is the always interesting dynamic of regional one seed did not have the facilities to host in Old Dominion, which I always feel bad for the school when that happens. Last year, I think notably the Indiana State Super Regional was moved to Fort Worth, which is a very tough sled for that team. What was as the three seed in that regional, you're going to Columbia, where South Carolina is a, you know, big school, big baseball program, big set of fans that pack it. Did it, because you're going to South Carolina, did it feel like South Carolina was the team to beat in that super regional, even though ODU was technically the number 11 seed?
Oh yeah. After the first game and how mean everybody was, I was like, look, I don't care how
South Carolina fans. No,
I was like, I don't care how the rest of this goes. I want to, you know, we want to beat them because, you know, they have spirited fans, but we knew, hey, if we're playing a team in the championship and it's the home team, or, you know, the team whose fans live the closest to the field we're playing at, it's going to be way tougher than playing like two neutral people, you know. And it really, like, we were fortunate in the sense that we had the opportunity. We lost to them right off the bat, and like we had our backs against the wall. And, you know, that's a fun place to play from because no one really expects that much out of you. They're like, all right, we're going to try to put you down. How are we going to do it?
I was going to say, losing the first game of a regional is regional or the College World Series is usually a death knell. No chance. Oh,
yeah. And that's for us. Like, we were like, how savage would it be to just like go to their place, you know, with backs against the wall? No one's expecting anything out of us. We just aren't going to give in, and we're just going to fight our way through. Like, that's a savage move. Like, that's way better than winning it at home. And, you know, that's what happened. And it was just
and
so
beating the
fun.
Higher state, the higher seeded in-state school, plucky upstarts UVA beating big bad Old Dominion.
I know. It was such a crazy game. And I still remember the first game we played Old Dominion, where Brandon Neeks struck out everybody. That's still the coolest baseball game I've ever seen. Like, I've never seen anything like that. And I don't think I ever will since. But I mean, you talk about, like, I thought we were in the Twilight Zone for that whole region. Like, it was weird.
So, speaking of kind of the Twilight Zone, we everyone can go watch the interview that really put you on the map in that regional. But watching it back, I was just more... Post-game interviews are usually very like, hey, Steven, you guys had your backs against the wall. You know, how'd you battle back? You know, what do you guys think about playing South Carolina or Old Dominion tomorrow? Whatever. They just, like, let you cook, which I found really interesting. Like, they asked a couple questions, but they were just more, like, very, like, short questions. And then it's like, I just wanted to know what you were feeling in that moment, because it was they were kind of just like, hey, buddy, fill airspace.
Yeah, no, first of all, I did not know Mike Monaco and Gabby Sanchez weren't on site. I didn't know that was possible. I didn't realize I was essentially in like an Xbox Live party chat with them, which made me feel dumb after the fact, because I was like looking at the press box and I've always been taught to make eye contact. But like, I was not thinking about anything at all other than the fact that, like, oh my God, we just beat South Carolina. Like, that's so cool. Because growing up and watching college baseball in the early 2010s, what playing for Virginia, one thing, that's insane. Playing for the postseason Virginia, that's another thing. But playing against South Carolina, a storied program like that, you know, it's just so great, because it's like Founders Park is a pinnacle in college baseball in itself. Like, I think it's such a cool place. And like, you think about that program and historically they've been so good. So like, being able to go there and beat them, for me, it was like, look, a lot of people told me I couldn't do things like this. Well, hey, here we are. Like, it was a lot of just like pride of like, okay, I know that I just lived out my dream. And then they put a headset on me and I was so full of adrenaline. And Mike Monaco and Gabby Sanchez, great dudes. They just kind of, it wasn't even supposed to be broadcast, because it was supposed to go to a softball game right after. But Mike Monaco called a lot of the producers after and was like, hey, we need to air this right now. Like, I promise you it'll get clicks. Like, people will pay attention to it, because it was funny. And which I had no idea about. I didn't even realize like anything was happening from it, because I just went full stream of conscious. Like, I was just talking from my heart, because I don't like the acting. I don't like the, well, defense played really good, and got to give credit to them. I understand why guys do it. I understand.
I don't like the post-game interviews where I'm like, I could have given that, and I didn't play in this game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want to learn something. I want insight. But also, I understand, like, they think, oh, scouts might analyze this, or scouts might think this of me. Me, I was like, I don't care what scouts think of me. Like, I cared what scouts thought of me junior year, when I thought they were going to give me $125,000. Now, when they're going to give me $100 and a plane ticket and a plate of beans, no, thank you. I do not care what they think. Like, because I just finished my dream. Like, I just did it. So I was like, I do not care what people think about me. Like, I'm just going to go out and be who I am. Like, I didn't even realize I did anything significant in the interview. Like, I was just, again, like, a lot of my teammates would talk to me about it, and they were like, yeah, no, that's just kind of how you are. Like, that's just Steve. And so it was definitely just like an out of body experience.
What was the moment you realized things had changed in terms of, I don't even like your persona, your level of college baseball fame? What was the moment it was like, this is weird?
So that game, or that was game one of a doubleheader. We had to play Old Dominion that night, and my phone was gone. Like, it was just in my bag, because of course we're playing a baseball game, and I thought I was going to pitch again, because Brandon Neek was like, it was, if Brandon Neek got in trouble, I was coming in. So he hadn't like pitched more than 1.2 innings or something like that, like in a row. And so we weren't sure what was going to happen out there. And so every time he went out there, like, I had to get up and throw a couple of pitches. And by the third time he struck out the side, I was like, I'm going to do it again, just on principle and superstition, but I'm not going in this game. Like, he's going to strike out the side again. And he would. It was insane. So
it's the, like, best part about regionals in the College World Series is every year, some guy out just has an out-of-body experience in terms of, like, they're a one-inning reliever. It's the Michael Roth thing. Every year someone kind of does the Michael Roth thing, maybe not on that stage, but it's like the lefty specialist throws six innings and wins a game you had to win.
Yeah, it was so cool. And I was like, this is like the coolest day of my life because of that game. And then I looked at my phone and I was like, whoa, things are a lot different. Like, I was getting texts from people that I didn't even know knew I exist. And I was like, okay, that's different. But I was on Twitter and I was like, okay, a lot of people have followed me. A lot of people are liking like this tweet about me. Okay, cool. Like, yeah, go back to the hotel. You're going to have a dinner and go to sleep. And my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, texts me and she goes, you should tweet something funny. And I was like,
that's a lot of pressure.
Okay. I was like, oof, I should be funnier. And then I was like, what's like something that's going on in the world right now? And she was like, well, and she was like, here's an idea for a tweet. Like, say like, obviously big day yesterday, and then say congrats to someone who did something big. And I was like, okay. And I was like, obviously a huge day yesterday, comma, congrats to Prince Harry and Princess Meghan on having a baby, or whoever it was, Meghan Markle, the woman from Suits, who's now a princess. Don't really
Meghan Markle. Yeah. Yes.
Talk about weird career paths. Might as well bring that in there. Yeah. And then people started following me, and it ultimately turned into a thing where I was talking about baseball. But I didn't know what I wanted to talk about. Like, I just had followers and I was like, okay, well, there's 30,000 people who want to hear from me. How can I give them something to be entertained by? And so I went to a bunch of summer ball games that year. I went to the Wilmington Sharks. God, that just almost sent me down a portal of getting confused. But went to a Wilmington Sharks game, and that was really fun. Met a lot of guys there in the bullpen, and they were all cool. And they're like, oh, you posted about this, and that was cool. And like, oh, you actually posted one of my buddies the other day. And like, I was like, that's really cool. Like, that people care, that people pay attention. So I was like, okay, well, what am I going to talk about? Well, people follow me because of college baseball. Might as well just turn the spotlight around and put it back on the players. Because at the end of the day, like, all of this, I understand that I'm incredibly lucky to be in the job I'm in, to be in the profession I'm in, and to get to do what I do every day. But I also understand, like, all of that's possible because there are people who want to hear from me and want to support me, which I can't appreciate enough. But it's just been so much fun getting to share college baseball and getting to share who these guys really are.
And you've turned yourself, like, that interview in regionals, not to skip over, like, you guys win a super regional, you play in Omaha. You live out a dream that Sidewinder junior and high school guy probably did not think was coming.
Oh, no idea.
But you guys make it to Omaha as a 3 seed, but you finish the College World Series as this kind of college baseball folk hero in a sport that weirdly feels like it's in its infancy. It obviously has this long storied history, but in terms of coverage, there being more and more platforms, more and more independent podcasts and places that are covering college baseball, like, I think the future has really never been brighter. But with you, before we get into like what you're doing now and how you didn't get drafted. You had mentioned like scout, you know,
mm-hmm.
As someone who Claude, we were talking before we started recording, and like, you and I are of a similar ilk, not of size or talent, but like in how far we wanted to take baseball and like clawing for every single year we could get. Was there like a mourning period when it was like, okay, I have this spot in baseball now in terms of like being this guy that people are talking about, but I'm not getting the free stuff anymore. I'm not getting to play.
Yeah, so it was definitely a transition, but I had made the decision pretty early on that I was like, look, this is it. Like, this is my swan song. My back hurt all the time. My second outing in Columbia, so against ODU, I popped a little bit in my elbow, and I was like, all right, we probably don't have much time left. So, like, now these two fingers, like, I don't feel them at all, which totally fine. I don't need them. Like, I still got control over them. Like, I could, like, hit them with a hammer, nothing, whatever. Like, that's totally fine. I was like, you know, it's probably time to hang him up, you know? And so I had gotten a few calls.
The foot in Mr. Deeds.
Honestly, yes, exactly. The black foot. And I was just like, all right, we've had our fun. We've accomplished a lot of our goals in terms of what we wanted to do. We ended up with 2 degrees because, like, going into college baseball, my goal was always get an education my brain couldn't afford me and have a great time while I do it. And I ultimately did both of those things. So I was like, okay, we checked off both the boxes. We are prepared to live a good life. And so for me, I had gotten a few calls around like free agency time. And they were like, hey, Steve, like, if you want, like, the opportunities here. And I was like, nah, you know, like, I don't want to waste your time. Like, I understand how it is. Like, I would have to recover. I would have to probably get surgery. And, you know, I'm already old. Like, don't worry about it. Like, we are good. We're good. Just follow me on Twitter and, you know, draft some guys to talk about and we'll be cool.
So the fun thing with what you've done with this persona and covering college baseball, you made some return trips to Omaha as a member of the media, or, you know, you were before you had some airport trouble, you were going to cover a big college baseball series this weekend. Mm. But, like, you're posting about club baseball and you posted about junior college and you've shined. Yeah, you know, the club baseball thing is like there's not this massive appetite of like, hey, we got to, you know, like D1 baseball or Baseball America is not starting like the club baseball coverage zone. But, like, you've just shown a general love for college baseball. Like, do you feel like you need to cover certain things, or is your whole mantra just been like, this piques my interest. Like, I think that's what people want to hear.
Oh, all it is like all of college baseball. Like, I'm all my merch, like, college baseball is rad. I say it all the time because it really is, like, all levels. Like, club baseball is supposed to be fun. And I went to a club baseball game and I was just taken back by how little these guys cared about anything other than having a good time on the field. And, like, there's this kid for ECU, just a giant dude. He swings and misses at a pitch from an NC State pitcher. He's well behind on it. Everybody in the NC State dugout is like, oh, lose 20 pounds. Maybe you'll catch up to it. Next pitch hits the furthest home run I saw that weekend. And he's rounding the bases, slapping his gut, saying, maybe I won't. And it was like, how do you not love something like this? Like, these guys are getting after it. They're competing, and it's all for the love of the game. Like, they pay their gas bills to get there. And so for me, I think just baseball in general, like, any level, any aspect of the game, it's such a great game. And, like, for me, I've been able to live my life and meet all these wonderful people through baseball. So it's really just my way of giving back and trying to shine a light on, you know, if you're, like, looking at it and you're like, hey, maybe I can't play college baseball. Club baseball is right there. Like, the opportunity is there. I remember I was terrified growing up because I was like, oh, I'm going to have to go to a college one day and try out for the team. And if I don't make the team, it's over. I have no understanding of how college baseball works. So I'm just trying to shine a light on all of it and let people understand and see, like, no matter what level you're at, there's always a way to compete and go out and have a good time with your friends.
I'm not saying this disingenuously. Do you have goals? Do you have things you'd like to accomplish in coverage of college baseball? Like, do you want to call a game? Do you want to, is there anything, or is it just like, we're vibing?
Honestly, like, I just want to keep having fun. You know, I want, my biggest goal is for it to just be on TV all the time. So people can't get away from I want college baseball to be shoved in my head the same way the Masked Singer is shoved in my head. I know nothing about the Masked Singer except T-Pain did phenomenal on it one time. But either way, like, I want it to be like every day people are coming home from school and from work and they're like, hey, Dad, you see what Blake Burke did at the plate, or you see what magic Charlie Condon made at the dish today? Like, that's cool stuff. And so I wouldn't say, like, individually my goals are like, oh, I want to go out and do this. I do think it would be cool for there to be a college game day on ESPN about college baseball, but I understand that there's a lot of hoops to jump through to make something like that happen. I would say my biggest goal is to just buy a van that I can sleep in and kind of live in for the spring and just drive around to different college baseball games. I think Now that I've stumbled into the answer, that is the final answer. That's the biggest goal aside from making it, you know, to the point where college baseball, I know that's not really my goal. It's kind of the community's goal as a whole, I would say. But the individual one would be, you know, the college baseball mystery machine.
It'd be a real shame if when we got off this call, you started a Patreon and started trying to fund that and see it, you've got like nine-ish months to kind of make that happen. So
yeah, I mean, look,
it'd be a real shame if you went sell. For it.
I think 2025 is the year of the van. I think that's when it's going to happen. Then airlines can't bail on me. I'm just going to be, you know, I'll have to find safe places to park it. But other than that, we're good.
We're golden. Yeah. I want for college baseball. I want how the first week of March Madness, everyone talks about it. Everyone needs to be talking about Mike Rooney, absolutely cooking on bases loaded.
Oh my goodness.
It's insane. 80 grade performance every year. I don't know how he does it.
I have no clue.
Truly, truly incredible. If you could go back and give yourself a pep talk at 18, right as you get to App State, what does that pep talk look like?
I would probably say, hey, man, just go with the flow. There's this thing. I took world religions in high school. I don't remember the exact wording of it or what it was called. It might be called the Wu Wei, but it's a Taoism thing, which is the theory that we are all just leaves floating on water and we can't really control where we're going. Like, we can hope to go somewhere. I would tell myself, take a little bit of that leaf on the water and understand that, hey, you can paddle yourself from time to time too. And like, you know, that success, you can go and find it. So I wouldn't give myself anything specific because I like the mystery. I like finding things out. Like, sure, I would love to go back and tell myself like, hey, you should go get a dog right now. On this date, you're going to get that. Like, that would be cool. But at the same time, I like the mystery, the thrill of the ride, really.
That is one of the better answers we've had on that question. I got a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
I got you.
Favorite road college ballpark?
Favorite road college ballpark? Oh, man, Founders was sick. I love so many. I'm going Founders because it's one I played in. But if we're going just in general, it's hard not to like the Duke. That place is a fun place to be.
Best hitter you ever faced?
Ryan Mountcastle.
Favorite Charlottesville food spot?
Miller's downtown. They have a thing called the Charlottesville Nasty Chicken Biscuit. They serve it till 3 a.m. so you can do whatever activities you might do till 3 a.m. For me, it's playing pinballs on the third floor at Miller's and eat those. It's phenomenal.
Sounds great. Which Everybody Wants Some character are you?
I'm Willoughby. The guy who transfers around, the grad guy who ultimately gets busted. If we did not live in a digital world, if we were in the portal days of my first portal experience where it didn't exist, I think I'd still be playing college ball. I think I'd find a way.
Forging some transcripts, finding some med red years, 100%. Who is your go-to Mario Kart character?
I like Link. I know that's a controversial topic because it's very strange. He's not like Mario, but for me, I just really like the way he's on the motorcycle. Like he's a good guy. He's a hero of Hyrule.
He is. So the last one, everyone gets this. And typically a lot of the guys who are on the show play in the minor league. So they have nightmare bus ride stories. You played at a bunch of different colleges, bunch of different summer ball. You have a nightmare travel story from this past weekend, which just seems like flight cancellations. Do you have a bad bus ride, anything like that in the portfolio?
Yeah. So the worst one ever, first of all, I don't get why you can't poop on the bus. I understand that that's a thing, but I'm going to hold firm.
You can't do it. Depending on the length of the ride.
Okay, so 14 hours from Troy, Alabama back to App State. I don't know if it was actually 14 hours. It felt like that. It was my freshman year, and I had my first save opportunity where I hit everybody. Just did not stop hitting guys. Blew that save. And then had a migraine because, you know, I'd hit myself from time to time, and sometimes I would get myself pretty good. Anyway, so we had a migraine the whole time and we had a sleeper bus, which I have no idea how I got a bed on the sleeper bus. But I was like, yeah, let's go. Let's take that. On a sleeper bus, if you don't have a separate pillow that like has its own suspension system. You're just gonna be shaking like this the whole time trying to sleep. And I remember we went to a McDonald's in like the middle of nowhere, Alabama. And I just went into the play place because it was so loud in there. And I was like just sitting like this in a ball pit, just like shaking from the headache I had. And we drove through the night with a bus driver that I don't know like how he stayed awake, but he just kept going. So that has to probably be the worst one.
That sounds absolutely terrible. We're Steven Schock. That is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining for Phenom to the Farm.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
You got it, man. And that's it for today's episode with Steven Schock. Huge thanks to Steven for stopping by, walking us through his career. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.